I'd like to welcome everybody to Parsha Kedoshim in the year 5768. Kedoshim, be holy. We have just concluded a wonderful season of Pesach, and we are already well on our way in the weeks of Sfiras HaOmer, the intermediate weeks between Pesach and Shavuos. As we are taught in our tradition, Pesach is the time of our freedom, but it is not the freedom to frolic and play in the sun, but it is the freedom to become who we were really created to become, and that is the children of Hashem, and to serve Him, and that will be culminated, please God, in several weeks' time as we celebrate the holiday of Shavuos, which marks the receiving of the Torah that the Jewish people had on Mount Sinai. So we are really in the middle of a very, very specific type of a journey. You can follow it in the Chumash. If you follow the story of the Jewish people as they went from Egypt till they got the Torah, that's recorded in several sections in the book of Shemos. But just as it's happening to them, it is happening to us. And it's a very, very special time. In fact, I was in a little bit of a dilemma. I've been thinking about how to proceed. I'll tell you, we have a very large task in front of us. On one hand, this is a Parsha class, so we have to address the Parsha. On the other hand, we want to take advantage of this special time in the year between Pesach and Shavuos, as we have mentioned. And on the third hand, we also have to do justice to the Mesilas Yesharim, which is our chosen theme for the year. So how do we combine all of this? My initial thought was, well, the Mesilas Yesharim is broken down into different midos, into different qualities or attributes. And there's at least six of them. So why don't we take the 6 weeks that we have between now and Shavuot, 6 Fridays to be exact, and let us study in each week one of the qualities. Let week one be the quality of zehirus, of watchfulness or vigilance, and find a connection to the weekly parsha on that. Or the next week, let's study alacrity, zerizus, and connect that to the parsha. And the next week, nikius, cleanliness, etc. That was my initial thought. But then I said, there's a problem. Because the problem is that these qualities do not exist in a vacuum. We cannot snap our fingers and say, let's study zehirus, let's be vigilant, let's be watchful, and next week let's be zealous and filled with alacrity. Why not?
Forget about the previous one?
What was the previous one? Oh, I see what you're saying, because then we would forget what we did the week before. That's also an occupational hazard of learning. Are we forgetting what we did before? You know the joke, the sages say that every day the study of Torah should be new. So the student says, well, that's good, because I always forgot what I learned the day before, so it always is new. Another thing I was referring to is that to get on to the Mesilas Yesharim, to get on to the path of the qualities, we are taught by Rabbi Pinchas, the teacher of this statement, Torah Nevi'a Lidei. It is the study of Torah that brings us to the path in the first place. And one could say that our sole preoccupation during the weeks leading up to Shavuos should be to strengthen our understanding and our appreciation and our resolve to study Torah. One could say that that should be the overarching message of the Kollel all the time and of every Jew. Study Torah, study Torah, study Torah. And of course we're preaching to the choir because you're all here to study Torah. But that has to be constantly reinforced. So how's this for a compromise? How about if we try to do it all? How about if every week between now and Shavuos we will study about the importance of studying Torah through the lens of one of those qualities and the weekly Parsha? Sounds ambitious? It sure is. All right. So I just want to tell you that's the game plan with God's help for the next 6 classes. Okay, so what lesson of Torah study are we looking for today? I have to tell you, I was a little stuck. No, I was a lot stuck. The Parsha is Kedoshim. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor. Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael, v'omarto alehem kedoshim tihiyu. Speak to the entire assembly of the children of Israel and say to them, be kedoshim. Popular translation, you shall be holy, ki kadosh ani Hashem elokechem, for holy am I, Hashem, your God. Be holy, because I'm holy. Beautiful. What does that mean? What does holy mean? How do I be holy? And the Parsha, by the way, is filled with a total of 51 separate, distinct commandments. So it's not like the whole Parsha is devoted to Kedoshim. Kedoshim is an opening line, and after that we're off and running to revering parents, keeping the Shabbos, staying away from idols, refraining from invalidating our offerings, the sacrificial offerings, giving gifts to the poor, dealing honestly with others, loving your fellow Jew, the famous Pasuk, V'yahavta l'recha kamocha. There are laws of agriculture, there are laws of servants and slaves, business, what have you. Everything's in Kedoshim. 51 mitzvos, it may be the highest concentration. Put it this way, Kedoshim only has 64 verses, and there are 51 mitzvos. So that's a pretty high concentration of mitzvos, wouldn't you say? So what is the theme of the Parsha? It's very, very hard to know. There may not even be a theme. But we know that the Parsha starts off with the words Kedoshim Tihiyu. Be holy. Now, there are two of the most well-known interpretations of that phrase. Rashi, on the words Kedoshim Tihiyu, says, Hevu prushim min ha'arayos u'min ha'avera. You shall refrain from the forbidden sexual relationships that are enumerated in the previous Parsha and will be repeated in this Parsha as well. These are known as the arayos, the forbidden relations. Most of them are incestuous. Forbidden relationships. You may have noticed last Shabbos when we read it. It also includes adultery, includes homosexuality, bestiality. That is a very prominent section of last week's Parsha. According to Rashi, this is a continuation of that and says, be kedoshim, be particularly adherent to these restrictions. The Ramban is the other popular interpretation, and he says that the word kedoshim is associated with the word prushim. Parush means to abstain, but rather than being an abstinence from that which is prohibited, says the Ramban, it's abstinence from that which is permissible but excessive. So, according to Ramban, kedoshim tihiyu means, of course, we're going to eat kosher food, but don't be a glutton. Of course, we're going to only drink Manischewitz wine, but don't be an alcoholic. Of course, we are going to be monogamous, but take it easy. Show a little moderation. Okay? That's what it means according to the Ramban. And he says, famous words, if a person would not follow this pasuk, Kedoshim Tihiyu, he could be a naval birshus HaTorah. He could be a despicable human being, all with the approval, so to speak, of the Torah, because everything is kosher. Has anybody spent Pesach in a kosher hotel? Well, you guys did. Grandma and Grandpa's house. That's the best hotel. Okay. I just read an article in the Where, What, When, a Baltimore publication. And there was an article there, and they were speaking to a rabbi in the West Coast, and they were asked him, what is the greatest threat to Judaism in America? And he said, the Pesach Hotel.
Wow.
He says, you know, Pesach is all about eating matzah and getting away from bread and leaven and going back to basics and being humble and being moderate. And these Pesach hotels make Pesach into, he called it a food orgy. It's excessive beyond belief. He said this is his, the greatest fear. Anyway, that would be a perfect segue into the Ramban's interpretation of Kedoshim Tihiyu. Now, let's keep track. We're talking about the Parsha, we're talking about Torah, we're talking about Zehirus. Where in the world are we going? let's think just for a minute. These two interpretations of Kedoshim Tihiyu seem to be very, very divergent from one another. Rashi says it's referring to the forbidden incestuous relationships. That's like a biggie. That's like a cardinal sin. So the Torah is saying, stay away from the cardinal sins. And the Ramban is talking about, don't eat too much kosher food. Be moderate in things which are permissible. I mean, those are very far from one another. How can they both be valid interpretations of Kedoshim Tihiyu? What does one have to do with the other? So let's put that question on hold. Now let us enter into the realm of Mesilas Yesharim. The Mesilas Yesharim says, and we have studied this before, we have cited this before, Zihirus, from the lens of Zihirus, vigilance. In chapter 2, Rabbi Luzzatto defines Zihirus in the following way. The virtue of vigilance. The concept of vigilance relates to a person's actions and affairs. He must contemplate and survey his actions and his conduct to see whether they are good or not, so as not to risk the loss of his soul, heaven forbid. He must not pursue his habits thoughtlessly, the way a blind person walks as in darkness. Vigilance. Thinking before acting. Don't just act. Don't just go about life blindly. Pursuing habits thoughtlessly. In chapter 5, in his further development of the attribute of vigilance, Rabbi Luzzatto makes a very, very bold claim. The claim is that the only way we can be vigilant is to overcome the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, which drives us to go about pursuing our habits thoughtlessly. That is this strong force of the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination. The only way we can beat the evil inclination is by the study of the Torah. The only way. In chapter 5, we previously mentioned that the most essential thing for attaining vigilance is Torah study. As Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair said, Torah brings one to vigilance. Without that, vigilance would be unattainable. He's making a very, very bold claim. He's saying, unless you study Torah, you will not be able to escape the drive to go about living life and pursuing our habits thoughtlessly. We're going to be like a blind man without studying Torah. That's a very bold statement. He proves it because the sages say, in the name of Hashem, a tradition, Barasi Yetzer Hara, Barasi Lo Torah Tavlin. I have created the evil inclination. I'm the one who made the illness, said God, so to speak. And I have created the Torah as its antidote. And he compares it. You may remember, he compares it to a patient who goes to a doctor. The doctor diagnoses him as having a certain disease. He prescribes for him a certain medication. And the patient says, well, I think that I'll do better with a different medication. He's a fool. Because this is the only known medication for that disease. If you take another medication, it's just not going to work. And the same thing is the Torah for the Yetzer Hara. And that is what we would like to understand today. Why is it that we need to study Torah in order to escape the disease of the Yetzer Hara? Why is that claim there? How do we accept that? So now we've dug ourselves some big holes, and let's try to fill them with Hashem's help. So I was stuck. I was trying to get a sense, a handle on Kedoshim, on the meaning of the Rashi and the Ramban, and the exclusivity of this antidote of Torah study versus Yetzer Hara, trying to get a grasp on it. So I turned to an old friend. You know, if you want to be a millionaire, sometimes you don't know the answer. You have to call a friend. So I called an old friend. And who is our old friend? Our old friend, Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz. So let me share with you some of his breathtaking insights. He is focusing on Kedoshim Tihiyu. He is talking about the Rashi and the Ramban. And he says something which I would only mention in this group because we are serious, we are initiated. These are some difficult pills to swallow. Let's start this way. Anyone who wishes to go through life, as the sages say, this world is like a corridor to the world to come. Anybody who wishes to travel through life en route to the world to come must see this world as a corridor. We are just passing through, like the Chafetz Chaim, the famous story of the Chafetz Chaim, often told. A visitor came to his small town, wanted to visit the distinguished, world-renowned rabbi, came in expecting that he would have quite a nice, comfortable living quarters. He saw that it was just a bare one table, a few chairs, nothing fancy whatsoever. And he asks the rabbi, he says, where's all your nice furniture? You're one of the greatest rabbis alive. And the Chafetz Chaim turns to him in surprise and says, where's all your furniture? And he says, me? I'm a traveler. I'm just passing through. Why would I have furniture with me? The Chafetz Chaim says, I'm also just a traveler just passing through. We're all just traveling through this world. We have a more important destination. We don't need riches for that. Says Rav Yerucham, for a person to actualize living this life as a carter to the world to come, he must apply that to a realm which is much more personal and hits home. And that is, we are all created with a body and a soul, a guf and a neshama. If we want to fulfill the formula of seeing this world as a corridor to the world to come, which means this world is secondary, it is a means to an end, the end being the next world, we have to have that same outlook with our body and our soul. Our body has to be that means to the soul. Our body is that corridor. Our body is secondary to the soul. The body is here to enable the individual to build up his soul. The body is not here to be the boss. The body is not the main thing. Gratification of the body is not our purpose. But the body is here to facilitate the traveling of the soul through this world. Now, he really analyzes this more. What is the body? Is the body some kind of this evil thing? A body is just totally neutral. A body is neutral. When a person passes on from this earth, the body remains. It's completely lifeless. A body is just skin, bones. What is the body? He says, it's not the body. It's the sensation that an individual focuses on with his body. It is the hargasha gashmis. It is the physical senses. I'm going to call it sensuality. This is the body. Sensuality versus spirituality. If we want to successfully pass through this world and enter the world to come, we have to negate a life of sensuality, where we are here to feed our senses. Good taste, good feel. I think it goes even into the more psychological or emotional aspects, sense of honor, pride, that leads to jealousy, the desire for recognition, desire for things to be just the way I want them. These are the senses that come along in this world. They come along with our body. When we're alive, we have these senses. If we follow those senses, if we allow those hargashot gashmiot, those physical, those material senses to dominate us, we are not doing so well on the path to the world to come. Because we are focusing on the this worldly sensation rather than the neshama. Now you may say, that's a very high level. Yeah, it may be in practice, but it has to be a priori in terms of our goal. Just like Rabbi Luzzatto starts off the book telling us, how do you build a foundation for piety, even though piety in practice is a very high level, but it's got to be there from square one, because that has to be our goal. Well, it's the same thing. It has to be our goal to strive to minimize sensuality and to maximize spirituality. And that is definitely not a natural state. Yes?
That's what I was going to say. Because we're also told that we're supposed to enjoy this world.
Okay. Notwithstanding, thank you for bringing that up, because I was going to say right away, does this mean that we are supposed to be ascetics? Aren't there mitzvahs that require us to enjoy? Isn't there a mitzvah called Oneg Shabbos, enjoyment of Shabbos, enjoyment of Yom Tov? Isn't a man and a wife supposed to be together in marital bliss? Yes. But it's just like we said, this world and the next world. Of course we have to be in this world. But what is driving what? Where's the horse and where's the wagon? The way to balance it out is use the mind first and the reaction second. Think before we eat. Not eat without thinking. What is the purpose? I'm going to eat. It's important to eat. Remember, we had a few weeks ago, we talked about the way that eating can connect us to God. Eating was created as a vehicle to connect us to God, but only if we think. Not if we go through it thoughtlessly. If we're driven by the instinct, if we're driven by the sensual drive, we will be thoughtless. We will be, like Rabbi Lusato says, the blind man, wandering thoughtlessly through life. We will be focused on sensuality rather than focusing on the spirituality of these acts. The holiness that can be derived, that can be gained by engaging in these holy actions as God has created for us. Only if we think about them. Only if we put the mind before the body. Yes?
It does beg the question then, what does enjoyment do for the soul? What does it do for the neshama, for the afterworld? In other words, we have certain things we're supposed to accomplish here. What place does enjoyment?
The enjoyment is what connects us to God. You make a bracha because you enjoy the food. So the enjoyment is a means, just like this world is a means to the world to come. The enjoyment of the food is a means to give us gratitude and express our gratitude to God. The marital intimacy is a means to create a closer bond between husband and wife.
Isn't it a higher payment, though, if you do something because, let's say you don't enjoy it, but you're going to do it anyway. Let's say you don't have an appetite.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I had the flu a couple
never
weeks
happens.
Ago. It didn't happen to me, but I wasn't feeling well.
Right, and you didn't have an appetite.
I didn't have an appetite. And my son said, you got to get me the Shema, which I did. I had to get up and eat something, which I did, but I had to do it. And
right.
I did the brachas, and it seemed like under those circumstances, you have a higher attainment because you really didn't have it. You're doing it because you know it's the proper thing to do. And that I wasn't enjoying it. So
it could be that you were given a gift of an opportunity to think beyond the sensuality of eating and think about it as a dutiful, as a spiritual act. Could be. That's not the norm. I think God made food so tasty because he wants us to struggle in this area. It is the mind over matter. That is the path you strive for. It's not supposed to be that the food doesn't taste good. Then there wouldn't be any growth. But we have to go through life and say, if we want to get to Olam Haba, we have to minimize, we have to negate the notion that in this world, sensuality is the goal of experience. Yes?
Since there was any doubts about food and the bracha before, because well, you really want to eat it, and are you doing it for Hashem or are you doing it for yourself? It's the bracha after that's the real clincher. That's the one that, you know, there's nothing to gain afterwards.
So that's very good.
I think that's where you really prove your connection to Hashem. In case you're not, like in the case where you really didn't want to eat.
I've been pointing out, that's the difference between our religion and every other religion. They all pray before. You know, afterwards they walk away from the table.
I appreciate that. I actually think that the bracha before is harder, because that's when you're faced with the animalistic drive to just to dig in, and you pause before you eat and you put the mind first before the body. I think that's a harder challenge. Once you've eaten and you're satisfied, okay, so I'll bench, I've got nothing to lose. I don't know, they're both sides to it. Let's go back to Kedoshim. Kedoshim to you. Rashi says that stay away from the incestuous relationships, which, as we noted, that's a biggie. What do you mean Kedoshim? That's one of the cardinals. Now, here Rabbi Sato says something quite, he quotes a commentary, the Sefarno, says something quite unusual. If you've never heard this particular Sefarno, you probably never heard of this idea before. I know I didn't. He asks a question, so So we're not supposed to marry members of our family. He says, if you think about it, if we're trying to create children, please don't ask me from genetics, because I think that may things have changed. He said, you find sources in the Torah that it was considered laudable to create familial marriages, and that they created superior offspring. Not brother, sister, but let's say Moshe's parents were aunt and nephew. Yocheved, right, was the aunt of Amram. Mm-hmm. They produced three outstanding offspring. Avram and Sarah were related. What is the other example he brings?
Yitzhak and Yaakov also married cousins.
Right. Now, again, I don't know how genetics fits into this, because we know from modern science that incestuous relationships tend to produce deformities.
It can go either way.
Could it go either way?
Yeah, oh, for sure. That's one of the reasons thoroughbred horses or thoroughbred animals, you either have a very good one or you have all sorts of problems.
Mm-hmm.
They can't fight disease in general. Their genetic makeup is such that if it goes in just a certain way, they're very likely to have diseases and have certain problems. So it can go either way.
Oh, okay.
I think it intensifies things,
mm-hmm.
and so that could go intensify either the good or intensify the bad.
Okay. So based on this question, the Sepharno reasons that that's not the reason why God prohibited incestuous marriages, not because they would produce inferior offspring. He says this is the following idea. He says, with every physical activity, as we said before, there could either be the sensual experience or there could be the spiritual experience. If Yocheved and Amram would have the highest spiritual kavana, intent, in their marriage to produce offspring for the service of God, they would have the greatest children, as they did. But he says most people in the world are not on such a high level. Most people of the world live with the sensual approach. And if so, making that assumption, to permit incest, you know what it would be? It would be like saying you could just be sensual whenever you want. At home, the family is always around. It would promote an abundance and an excess of sensual experience. And that's why God said, we're willing to sacrifice the top percentile of great kids that would emerge from it because of the 99% of sensual saturation that would occur. And therefore, God created somewhat of a distance. What's the message then, according to Rashi? Why is he repeating the Arayos? Because we just finished that. Why is Kedoshim reiterating that message? Because the message of Kedoshim is, as Rabbi Lubavitch said, we have to downplay the sensual experience in this life if we are to be the Jewish people. When the Ramban gives his interpretation, he's essentially saying the same thing. You know, it doesn't really matter if you're doing the forbidden or if you're doing the permissible. What's driving you? Are you being driven by the sensual experience? Therefore, it doesn't really matter if it's kosher or not. If you're going to be overindulging in the sensual experience, forget it. You're on the wrong path. You're going in the opposite direction. You're not going to Olam Hazeh, because your neshama is being totally strangled and suffocated because you are looking for sensuality. That's the meaning of Kedoshim Tihiyu. Don't strive for sensual experience. If you want to make it to Olam Haba, you have to strive for the spiritual experience.
I think that the common denominator word would be appetite. Because appetite is something sensual. And the idea is it's focusing on appetites, bad appetites and good appetites.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, we're not supposed to be working from appetite.
Mm-hmm. Good.
It's all focusing on appetites. And appetite is something that's automatic.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, as we're saying from Rabbi Luzzatto, nothing should be automatic.
Right. Thought before deed.
Yeah, appetite is automatic.
And the automatic is the blind man.
Right.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you the final question, which is going to tie this all together. As we're all sitting here wrapped up in this totally stimulating and scintillating Torah class, how many of us are thinking about running out for that sumptuous steak right now? You are?
I go to the Peter Palace after this.
Very good. But in other words, let me ask you a brutally honest question. When you're studying Torah, how do you feel? Do you feel sensual? Or do you feel
engaged?
Engaged. Intellectually, mentally, spiritually, like you're above the sensual experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's true, right?
Yeah.
Well, Rabbi Luzzatto is telling us that is the only secure way, the only surefire way that works.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can say, well, I'll go to the library and I'll read books. I'll read literature. Well, the literature is filled with sensuality. But besides that, it's written by men. It's written by men who are driven by sensuality. If it's not illicit, then the author is writing about power or human supremacy or whatever. It's not godly. It's not neshama. It's not spiritual. We're feasting on more and more of the human, feasting on more and more of the sensual. You can't break out of it. The only way we can break out of the sensual experience is to immerse ourselves in the waters of His Word, of His Torah. The only way. And that's why we study Torah primarily. It's not to become knowledgeable Jews, or it's not to become rabbis. It's to immerse ourselves in the pure waters of Hashem's neshama food for us. He created the Torah just for us. And when we are engaged in the study of Torah, we are able to break the shackles of this sensual experience. That's the only way to combat the Yetzer Hara. It's the only way to get on the other side. So, tying it all together, Kedoshim Tihiyu, stay away from sensuality. How? Rabbi Luzzatto, the only way to combat the Yetzer Hara is study the Torah. Rabbi Yerucham quotes a beautiful passage which I've seen before, but just takes on new meaning. A person, especially people who are aspiring scholars and very, very proud of my sons, extremely so. It says here that when a person approaches God in prayer and says, Hashem, please help me become a Torah scholar. Please help me get Torah into my body. So he quotes the Midrash, Ad sha'adam mispalel shikanes Torah lesoch gufo. Before a person davens that Torah should enter his guf, yispalel shelo yikansu madanim lesoch gufo. He first has to pray, Hashem, please keep all the delicacies of life out of my guf. Because you can't be preoccupied with both. You can't be striving for sensuality and striving for Torah and striving for Olam Hazeh. Now, I want to make myself very, very clear. We are talking on a very high level. We're talking about quality number 4, 5, precious abstinence. Is the purpose of this lesson to go home and say, the Ramban says that we have to minimize our kosher intake. Is that what the rabbi wants to give over? No. What are we here for? We're here to discover that our foundation of any spiritual life has to be rooted in the study of Torah. That's all we're trying to make. Because that will solidify us, that will give us the experience which is the antidote to the sensual experience. I'm not saying let's go home now and start minimizing our kosher food intake. I'm not saying let's go home and let's become monks. That may not be for anybody, and it's certainly not for us. But we can go home and say, if we want to strengthen our neshama, if we want to strengthen our mind, because that's what we are striving for in this world, we've got to study Torah. If we can take that lesson home, we've got to study Torah with a little bit more of an understanding of why we're studying Torah and why studying Torah is so vital, then we will have gained an important lesson from Kedoshim and from Rabbi Luzzatto and from this week. Thank you for listening. Go. Please.
One of the things that concerns me is the unity of the soul and the body.
Mm-hmm.
How are they united in life? We know that the soul leaves the body in death and returns to Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
But in life, it's the most vital force in existence.
What is?
The soul. It's the life force.
Mm-hmm.
But where is it?
Where is it?
And how does it animate the body? I know it's non-answerable.
It is. It is.
But still, it's so present in my consciousness because, you know, I look at human activity, I look at animal activity. Animals don't have as high a soul as humans, but they have life force. And it's given to them also by Hashem. So how does it happen?
It is as miraculous as God Himself. That's the answer. It cannot be explained scientifically. All the science can come to is that there's got to be something more, some power that science can't explain.
That's an intriguing response. But I would say that science progresses. And even Rabbi Alon Feldman spoke from the pulpit a couple of years ago about the discoveries of Watson and Crick, discovering the double helix, and he was present at this conference.
Mm-hmm.
He even said that double helix goes in a right-hand turn, and that has theological significance. So science is advancing, and can it not be that science will discover this?
I don't think science will ever discover the soul, not in the scientific realm. I think it will lead them to the conclusion that there must be a soul. But I don't think they'll ever be able to put their finger on it and say, there it is. That requires the soul at work.
Soul isn't physical, so it's not easy.
It's not physical.
The DNA is physical.
You know, you can talk about the blood. There's a statement in the Torah that the blood is the soul. Rabbi Luzzatto in Derech Hashem says something about that, and there's a footnote there too by Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. But, you know, when we make a bracha, when we use the restroom, the conclusion of the bracha is, Baruch atah Hashem, Rofei chol basar umafli la'asos. Blessed are you, Hashem, the healer of all flesh, who acts wondrously. In fact, Rav Moshe Isserles, one of the authors of the Shulchan Aruch, says, what is this acts wondrously idea? He says, how God can put a body and a soul together is just beyond human fathomability. It's just wondrous. It specifically refers to that aspect of man. But I think the scientist should be in a position where he can be more convinced of the existence of a soul, because he's gone to the extremities of science and sees that there's got to be another step beyond. The average person might not even go that far.
It's a testament to it.
Exactly. And by the way, you know who the first scientist who discovered God was? Abraham. He discovered God through science, through astronomy. He reasoned that there must be a God because he could not get to the cause. In his investigations, he could not get to the cause. He concluded that there must therefore be a God. Imagine to live in a world where nobody ever taught about God. All he had was his own senses. All he had was science. And he came to the conclusion that he was willing to devote his entire life to and turn the world upside down because of the sureness of his scientific discovery.
I was in the birthplace of Copernicus in eastern Poland, a town called Turin. And 500 plus years ago, Copernicus discovered that the Earth moved around the Sun rather than the Sun moving around the Earth. Very profound discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it with the simplest of implements in his mind. So one wonders where science will lead us.
All right. Well, thank God we have the Torah to lead us. In addition, I just wanted to say, since you brought up the Parsha, I would like to postulate, and as you look at the Parsha, consider if this is maybe true, that the mitzvos that are chosen, the 51 mitzvos that are chosen in Kedoshim, as opposed to in another Parsha, could it be that these mitzvos are designed to take a religious act and to fine-tune it to the point where the traces of sensuality are minimized? Like, for example, at the beginning of the Parsha, it says, when you bring the offering, don't make it pigul, don't make it invalid. What you're doing is you're taking, by having wrong thoughts, what you're doing is you're taking a religious act, but there may be some sensuality, if you will, some autonomous thoughts involved in the karban, and the mitzvah is remove those bad thoughts. In other words, these are like specialized mitzvos where we're trying to promote the utmost of purity, the utmost of spirituality, and the removal of the sensuality. Yes.
But then again, I mean, the idea that Rabbi Luzzatto has is to be focused on things, not letting anything happen automatically, right? You can bring a korban, and you could be thinking about the next mitzvah.
Right.
And totally cancel out the mitzvah you're doing
good,
right now.
Very good.
So it doesn't even necessarily have to be anything negative.
Mm-hmm.
The idea
mm-hmm.
is be totally mm-hmm. conscious and focused on the non-automaticness of what you're doing.
Good. Very good.
I thought you were going to go a little different path with this. Kadosh could be kadosh, it could be separate. Okay, separated. And all of these mitzvot that were given are to separate us from the crowd, because the rest of society does the same. Now, it's not necessarily accepted because we say it's not accepted. I mean, they learned it from us. But we are ultimately told we have to be kadosh. We have to be separate from the rest of the society. And these are part and parcel of the laws that we have to follow to separate us, to make us separate.
Well, that goes back to the appetite. Mankind in general goes by his appetite.
I don't think that contradicts. Separating ourselves doesn't mean secluding ourselves into a different section of the world or of geography. It means separating ourselves and what drives us. So what's driving mankind in general is the central experience. What's driving the Jewish people is the spirituality of the Torah.
And that's a struggle.
It's a very big struggle, but there's no way we can... in other words, basically, the case we're making is that we, for our own vitality, we have to support mentally, actively, financially. We have to realize that the study of the Torah is our lifeline. It is absolutely our lifeline. Nothing's going to happen to us physically, at least in the realm of nature, if we don't study Torah. A person doesn't wake up and see that if he doesn't study Torah, something's going to happen to him, right? But what's really happening is that decision, that difference of whether he is or whether he isn't, is determining the focus of his life. Mm-hmm. Is his life sensual driven, or is it spiritual? And that's the pivot. Thank you.